Hello, welcome to another episode of EMJ Live. Summer arrived yesterday, winter arrived today again, typical South Bend weather. The big event of this week was the death of Pope Francis. Sparked a lot of commentary, including commentary from me. I was on Ethan Rao's show at the beginning of the week talking about that, evaluating the papacy in light of my own experience, which was, I think, significant. Started off at the beginning of the papacy by going to Rome and meeting with one of the officials at the State Department. Talked to him about how the church was not proclaiming the gospel in three areas, church and state, the Jews, and usury. And he said, Pope's not going to talk about the Jews, I guarantee you that. What's church and state? But he said, usury, that's interesting. Give me something. And so I gave him how usury affects the environment. It ended up in Laudate Si. And I thought, this is great. We're going on to a new era, and I got a contact here, and then it ended as abruptly as it began. The Monsignor retired, and at that point, the Jesuits took over the papacy of Pope Francis. Now, it's not surprising because he himself is a Jesuit. You can't run this thing on your own. But when you begin an adventure like this in your 70s, oftentimes you have the cosmic view which does not deal with the realities, the pressing realities. So the Pope did address usury. After he went to Philadelphia, he went to New York and used the U word for the first time, I think, since Leo XIII ended Rerum Novarum by condemning rapacious usury. But after that, we got sidetracked with objections to that, for the encyclical whose name I forget now, the Dubia. He got angry at the people who raised the Dubia questions. And then we started James Martin, the Jesuit who is prominent as a promoter of homosexuality, evidently persuaded him to make various statements that were immediately misinterpreted as an approval of homosexuality. This boomeranged when he gave a private audience, or not a public interview to an Italian journalist and said there are just too many faggots in the seminaries. He used the Italian word for faggot, okay, which shocked everyone. Didn't seem like the James Martin line. Then there was the issue of the Latin Mass, which was also a Jesuit operation. Thomas Rees didn't like the fact that Catholics were going to the Tridentine Mass, so he persuaded the Pope to ban it, which had also serious consequences. Okay, but from my point of view, the biggest disappointment of the papacy was the fact that the Cardinal Tuco Fernandez issued a statement on Medjugorje, or should I say a non-statement on Medjugorje. So he's talking about the fruits, and in the middle of the statement he says, we're not going to evaluate the moral status of the seers. What? Wait a minute. The first thing you have to do is evaluate the moral status of the seers, because lying is an immoral act. And there's always the possibility that these people are lying. And I did a long book. I did two books on this, actually, and proved beyond a shadow of the doubt, not only were the seers lying, but that they were being manipulated by the Franciscans, two Franciscans in particular, Tomislav Vlasic and Jozo Zovko. Children do not create apparitions. It begins when it's approved by someone in authority. We had child seers at Fatima. They had to get the approval of the local authorities. That's what happens. Okay. And this was the beginning of a long tortured story, because the Franciscans, who were in a battle with the Bishop of Mostar at that point, basically took over the apparitions and turned them into a weapon against the bishop. I document this. I wrote two books, as I said, Medjugorje, The Untold Story, which came out in 1988. Huge controversy that did brought out, because that was in many ways the high noon of Medjugorje. And then I did the Medjugorje deception 8 years later. So what we're talking about here, you've got the authority of the church being pissed away by the people whose responsibility is to make authoritative judgments. And I'm holding Tuco Fernandez responsible for this. He should be ashamed of himself for issuing a statement which basically gives approval. No, he doesn't give approval. He doesn't say, I'm approving the apparitions. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying people there are making a lot of money. No, that's not what he said. No, that's what he meant, but that's not what he said. He said, well, it seems that there are good fruits. Well, I'm sorry. I've been down this road before, and every time you can come up with a good fruit, I can come up with a bad fruit. Pregnant nuns, disobedience, you name it. It's all in the book. It's called The Medjugorje Deception. Read the book. It's an important book because, now this is the interesting wrinkle, because Elon Musk is now involved in Medjugorje. Well, wait a minute. It's not quite that simple. It's AI is involved in Medjugorje, and particularly the Musk AI called Grok. And so I have a friend who is a certifiable master of the universe when it comes to Silicon Valley. He should be in their Hall of Fame. He knows what he's doing. He knows whereof he speaks. And he got into a conversation with Grok about Medjugorje, which is apparently knows everything. The first issue here was compare Medjugorje to Fatima. Okay, that seems simple enough. So, this is what Grok said. The argument that Fatima suffers from no controversies like Medjugorje's is compelling and well-founded. Fatima's limited apparitions, concise messages, and lack of scandal contrast starkly with Medjugorje's ongoing visions, verbose and sometimes nonsensical messages, for example, the bloody handkerchief, and a cloud of controversies, fraud, financial misconduct, and spiritual manipulation. From an unbeliever's perspective, assuming Medjugorje apparitions are fake, Fatima's simplicity and external validation suggest a sincere, if potentially delusional event, while Medjugorje successes point to deliberate fabrication. Now, there's a kind of a strange thing here. When you log on to Grok, you have to choose between the believer's perspective and the unbeliever's perspective. Well, wait a minute. Isn't that Grok's job? Well, no, because Grok can't do that. Grok can't make these type of decisions. So basically, if you say you're skeptical, Grok immediately takes that into account, and it goes right to yours truly, E. Michael Jones, the authority, the skeptical authority on Medjugorje. Okay? All right, I'm honored that they did that, although they got, as we see, they got it wrong pretty consistently. But then isn't this already programmed from the beginning? I mean, I'll go back, I'll tell you right now. I'm the guy who wrote the book, and in 1986, let's say, 1984, let's say, I didn't know. Is it real? Is it not real? All these pictures of these attractive teenagers, it was framed as a part of an attack on communism. We all hated communism. This is like John Paul II's solidarity. This is Solidarity South. It's an uprising against communism. We're all for it. And then I went over there and I realized, like what in Chinatown, Jake, this is Chinatown. It's not America, it's the Balkans. And the Balkans are the ultimate Chinatown, which is a really complicated, back and forth, complicated story. And I'm the naive American who thinks, is it liberals or is it conservatives? Which is it? Well, that's a stupid assumption that I had to give up. I had to give it up because it didn't fit reality. That was my category of the mind that I brought to that. It didn't fit the reality of the situation, which was fundamentally a turf battle between the Franciscans and the local bishop over who was going to control all these parishes. Okay. Now, from there, he jumps into money laundering. Is Medjugorje a center of money laundering? Well, yeah. Why did he say that? He said that because I said that. Okay, now I did not say this in 1996 when I wrote The Medjugorje Deception. I said this many years after the fact, at least 20 years after the fact, and I said it for a simple reason. I got a call from a member of the Bosnian parliament who told me, he's a friend of Bishop Perich, that was then the Bishop of Medjugorje. I met with Bishop of Mostar, met with him that time. We got a whole story here. And he's telling me it's money laundering and this is how it works. Okay? You have wealthy Italians who, let's say, put up 50,000 euros, send it to one of these not-for-profits at Medjugorje, is created by Italians, I think, for money laundering purposes, but they're, you know, to take care of Italian pilgrims, whatever they want to say. He gives it to the tax-exempt status. He gets to write off on his taxes, doesn't have to pay income on that because he wrote it off as a charitable contribution. They then take that money and invest it in a gas station, and the gas station now has a stream of income independent of Medjugorje, and it can, you can channel funds through that. And so what they do is they channel other funds through that. The guy, the Italian, gets to tax write-off, then he gets his $50,000 back, and then the people in Medjugorje have a gas station which provides the money, provides them with a steady stream of money. That's how it works. That's what I said. But I said that 20 years later. Why isn't Grok listening? Or what is Grok doing here? Grok is only a function of what gets put into it. So, claims. Jones asserts that the Medjugorje phenomenon driven by, this is Grok, Franciscan priests like Tomislav Vlasic and Jozo Zovko became a financial enterprise generating significant revenue. He suggests that the large influx of pilgrims, over 40 million since 1981, and donations created opportunities for financial misconduct, including money laundering. Specifically, he claims that some of the funds were funneled to support Croatian nationalist causes and potentially the Croat military during the Yugoslav wars. Yeah. Okay. That's true. The Medjugorje, and he said, I said it in Culture Wars magazine and the Medjugorje deception, which is not true. I've already explained that to you. Okay. This came much later. Okay. And then that's giving me the benefit of the doubt. Now Grok comes in and says, however, Jones's work is often polemical and he does not provide primary financial records or court documents to substantiate these claims. Oh, wait a minute. How does a computer know that my work is often polemical? How do you know that? I'm saying that this is not a polemical book. It's a factual book, and there are tons of facts. As a matter of fact, everything that Grok knows about Medjugorje pretty much is taken from that book. Why are they saying it's polemical? Okay, then the second thing is, how can Grok explain how money laundering can be documented by financial records? Isn't that the point of money laundering, that there are no financial records? So it's starting to become problematic here. Okay, lots of stuff, lots of back and forth here. Okay, constantly saying there's lack of conclusive evidence. No records. I'm sorry, but they don't. The whole point of money laundering is you don't have records. Okay. This is critical analysis. The allegations of money laundering via Medjugorje's Marian apparitions are rooted in the site's rapid economic growth and the chaotic political environment of former Yugoslavia, the involvement of Franciscans, the establishment of Herzegovina Banka, and the nationalist fervor of the time create a plausible scenario for financial misconduct. However, the sources, primarily Jones, the Google group thread, and The Guardian, rely on inference, anecdotal claims, or unverified reports rather than hard evidence like financial audits, wiretap records, or legal proceedings. Well, I've already told you about that, okay? So what our friend does, our master of the universe, changes the algorithm, the question. Take into account the Italian connection and the fact that not-for-profits and gas stations. So basically add two words, Italian and gas station, and suddenly Jones's explanation becomes, quoting Grok, highly plausible. Wait a minute, what's going on here? Is this a function of what? The machine can't do this. It can't make, as soon as you give some type of other explanation, suddenly the machine throws out its old operation and then it brings up this new operation. Okay, but again, no direct evidence, despite, so this, we're going back and forth here, back and forth here. Grok, the main claim that Grok has is that Jones based his claim about money laundering on a Vatican official cited by Jones who is unnamed. It's not true. That is simply not true. I never said the source was an unnamed Vatican official. I said the source is a member of the Bosnian Parliament by the name of Boris Kordic, and that he contacted me by email and he explained to me in detail how it worked. Now, what? Explain to me why this is not convincing. It goes back and forth here, back and forth. E. Michael Jones, again, they didn't know that. They should have known that. This guy, man, had firsthand knowledge because of his position in the parliament. It was discussed in the parliament, and they just don't, they're claiming I have source bias here. Okay. E. Michael Jones, a primary source of the claim, is a known polemicist. How do they know that? This sounds like the ADL to me. All they said, except for the word, maybe notorious polemicist, with a clear agenda against Medjugorje, framing it as a diabolical scheme. His reliance on a Vatican official's tip, unnamed, and tendency to sensationalize, linking Medjugorje to money laundering and nationalism, undermines his objectivity. This is wrong. This is just flat out wrong. And the main problem here is that the Grok, this artificial intelligence, is consistently working on an absence of information. When you start to read this thing more and more, you realize that basically the computer fastens on certain things. You know, unnamed source. And as soon as you say unnamed source, it's told to reject this, reject what I'm saying as unreliable. I'm not the source of, I named the source. It's not an unnamed source. Why are they claiming that it's an unnamed source based on a Vatican official? That's, I never said that. And so because I never said that, anyway, it just gets more and more involved. And then the question is, add more information, and suddenly it turns around and says the exact opposite. This, so there's some, a term here called the steel man. Which is, what does the steel man mean? What did we say this meant?
I think it was basically giving your opponent's argument at its strongest.
Okay, take your opponent's strong argument, strong as strongest. This is the final remarks. The steel man portrays Medjugorje as a sophisticated money laundering hub, leveraging its fake apparitions, pilgrimage cash flow, and not-for-profits to clean illicit funds for rich Italians, as Jones alleges. The gas station scheme, wartime precedent, and Vatican ties make this compelling, despite the lack of forensic proof, which the steel man attributes to criminal cunning. Okay. It gets worse. It gets worse. So I guess I was vindicated. I mean, Grok, please tell me, am I right or am I wrong here? It apparently it changes all the time. I don't know. I guess this, the latest thing is always the truest thing. And then it gets into me about being sensationalized here because it says that Tomislav Vlasic, the priest associated with the Medjugorje apparitions, was accused of fathering a child with a nun. though the details are complex and not fully corroborated by primary sources. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by primary sources of an illicit act that obviously took place in secret? A camera? Vlasic admitting that he did this? So let me tell you what I did do. Okay, the mother, they identify the mother of the mother of the child as Agnes Heupel. I'm sorry, Grok, but you just opened yourself up for a libel suit. That's not true. I never said that. In the first book, I spent the whole summer of 1988, a brutally hot summer, in a garage with no air conditioning, calling people all over the world to substantiate the claims that I was making in that book. And one of the people I called was the nun. Her name is Manda Kozel. I called her up. She was living in Germany. I tried to speak with her, to her in German. Her German is terrible. Her German is terrible, but I talked to her and she kept saying, no, I'm not going to tell you. And I said, well, you know, tell me the truth. The guy who answered the phone was her son, The Illegitimate Child by Thomas F. Vlasic. How much farther am I supposed to go here? Okay, now it seems that it's okay to say this, except Grok got it completely wrong and accused a woman who was not the person. What am I trying to say here? What am I trying to say? Garbage in, garbage out? Is that the lesson that we're learning here from Grok? Okay. I don't know what to say. Conclusion. Tomislav Vlasic was accused of fathering a child with a German nun, Agnes Heupel. She's not a nun, and that wasn't the woman. And then an allegation that contributed to his 2009 laicization alongside other charges while promoting Medjugorje's apparitions and disobedience. While he admitted to a relationship with Heupel, public evidence confirming maternity is lacking. Paternity test? What are we talking about here? This is in Detroit. The affair, if true, underscores Vlasic's controversial role in Medjugorje, aligning with the view of the apparitions as a fabricated phenomenon. For further details, Jones's book or Vatican CDF documents provide context, though both require critical scrutiny for bias or incomplete records. What am I trying to say here? Let's cut to the chase here. I could go on and on and on. Grok is no match for a book. If it weren't for my book on the Medjugorje deception, there would be nothing to discuss here. It is the only source, not the only source, but it's the main source of the story about Medjugorje, and Grok just mangles it. It mangles it. So what is the lesson here? Read a book. Don't ask AI. AI, if you want to know who won the World Series in 1952, then go to Grok and you'll probably get the right answer. Anything above that, forget it. Anyway, that's my rant. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hello, hello. This is Mike Bajakis, once again, coming to you EMJ Live. I'm Dr. Jones' assistant. Welcome to the call-in section of the show. Call-ins are going to be made via our Telegram. Link's going to be in description wherever you're at. Some quick rules. Try to keep questions on subject. Be respectful of everyone's time, and whatever you do, do not forget to unmute yourself. I'll allow you to speak on my end, and then you have to press unmute on your end, and then you can ask the question. Okay, let's jump over here. What do we got first? Let's start with GT. Go ahead, GT.
Hey, Dr. Jones, good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Can you turn that down a little bit?
Let me get it there.
How All right,
there?
Try it. Go ahead, talk. Go ahead, talk now.
Okay, so the Groks of the world, they're a two-sided coin. On the one hand, you need to be able to manipulate them because you can get them to tell the truth. And this is why they're afraid of it. If you spend time with it and you can say, well, this says this, and you help it go do research, you can get it to totally contradict itself and say say the truth. You just have to spend a little time giving it data. Its that's initial right. sweep is going to go get the popular stuff that's out there from the ADL and whatnot. Now, the powerful part of it is that it understands your language. It's incredible how you can carry on a conversation with it. But I want to give you a quick story. I asked it about the disclaimer that the bishops put into our missal, right, over Easter, about this can make you anti-Semitic. And I asked it, is there anything similar in Jewish Passover rituals about warnings, what it might make them think about Catholics? And I went back and forth with it. And it finally made a statement, well, there's no widespread persecution from Jews among Catholics, so it's not necessary. Or so, you know, I pressed it really hard. I thought you'd find that kind of interesting, that little debate I had with it was a Grok-like robot.
Yeah, yeah. No, something similar happened with the Holocaust narrative. So someone asked Grok, how many Jews died in World War II? 6 million. What did they do with the bodies? They were cremated. How long does it take to cremate a body? 6 hours. How long did it take to cremate all 6 million Jews? 78 years. So that was an honest, the computer is honest in that regard, and it was honest. And I have to say, when it comes to the question of is Medjugorje authentic, it came out and said, no, it's not. Fatima is, Medjugorje is not. Now, I suspect that you're saying you're skeptical influences the answer that you get from Grok on this question.
Yeah, you can get it to change its mind. It'll just kind of follow your lead, but its initial sweep of the data out there is going to be what the ADL puts out there, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Yeah, that's what happened. It did change its mind, and it said what I was saying was plausible after the guy added some more data made more pointed questions. Yeah, that's right. You're right. So, you know, it is what it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, GT. Next, we're going to go with Travis. Go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Jones.
Hello.
Hey, so I've been reading your book, Libido Dominandi, and I've been doing some external research just as to what you're talking about. So I was looking up Wilhelm Reich, and for those who don't know, Wilhelm Reich was a student of Freud, entertained Marxist ideas, and he put forth this notion of this life force called orgone energy that pulsates through us and expresses itself in laughing, crying, orgasming, and any blockage in that flow of orgone energy would manifest itself in neurosis. So he'd oftentimes prescribe his patients to masturbate with less guilt. All right, and I was looking this up. I know you know this, Dr. Jones. I'm just giving context. But later on, I'm scrolling through another article on the same web browser, and I come across this ad. And this ad says, your hypersexuality is not infidelity. It's an ADHD response. And I thought that you would think that's kind of funny.
So you're I had difficulty hearing. I don't know whether you're in a car or something like that, but there was a lot of background noise. So your hyperactivity is the result of an ADHD adult deficit disorder problem? Did I understand the question properly?
Your hypersexuality is not infidelity. It's an ADHD response.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, Reich was an incredibly influential figure whose behavior moved to America, and whose behavior at the end of his life was completely erratic and irrational, full of paranoia. He ended up in Lewisburg prison in Pennsylvania for some type of fraud, tried to get rid of him. He was the architect of using sexual liberation as a form of political control through political mobilization. And therefore, as a result, he's an incredibly important figure if you want to understand why the sexualization of our culture took place and who was in charge of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Travis. Let's go next to, let's see. Saucette Duvall, you there?
Yes. Hello, Dr. Jones.
Hello.
This is Eve from France. How do you do?
Good.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a question about the coming papal election due to your substantiation of Vatican II Vatican II lobbies. You were talking a lot about the Jewish lobby with Cardinal Bea and his assistant. And what do you think of the lobbies who would get into action with the coming papal election?
First of all, though, that story you're talking about Vatican II, Malachy Martin, Cardinal Bea, is true. Malachy Martin was an agent of the Jews. The American Jewish Committee and B'nai B'rith were paying him. But he failed. It did not succeed. And so I think that should restore our faith in the church. They wanted the church at that point. They wanted 2,000 bishops to come together and say that the Jews did not kill Christ. Now, that was really stupid. It was really overreach. It was chutzpah on their part, and it failed. So we have to remember that this story is a substantiation of the value of the church, the integrity of the church, and the ability to stand up to outside forces, and also the ability to resist them. Now, that doesn't mean, and it also stands up, it testifies to the legitimacy of that document. I'm talking about Nostra Aetate. Now, that does not mean that there are not problems with that document. I've said many times, the document said the church opposes all forms of anti-Semitism. Well, they never defined anti-Semitism. So you've got a flawed document, and it will remain flawed until you define that term. And I'm saying one of the major tasks that the church is facing right now is dealing with the Jewish question. It is the fundamental question of our age right now for the American empire, for the entire world. And the church is going to have to stand up to it. And that's why I'm saying now that I think the best candidate for Pope would be Cardinal Pizzaballo, who is the Patriarch of Jerusalem. So I'm hoping that he will, if the church were to select him, it would send a message to the entire world that basically we are going to take this situation seriously now. We are not going to let the Jews get away with genocide in Gaza and so on and so forth. That's what has to happen. It's got to happen.
When it comes to the last Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, you probably are aware he was a kind of not a puppet, but let's say the henchman for the St. Gallen Mafia. And do you think they will back off for the next election?
Well, 80% of the cardinals were appointed by Pope Francis. But what does that mean? I mean, which Pope Francis are we talking about? It seems to me whenever you got down to it, he would always give some type of assent to church teaching. I mentioned examples already. I'm just saying, look, the one thing that these cardinals cannot ignore is what happened in Gaza, what is continuing to happen in Gaza. This is a challenge to the entire structure of civilization. There is this deep-seated rage now among the people of the world, and I'm saying they cannot be immune to that. And I'm saying if they know the story, genocide is not a liberal or a conservative issue, if you're talking about church politics. It's a fundamental challenge to the law of rule of civilization. And I think these cardinals know it. And this is a way they could express their opposition to something that must be opposed. That's why I'm saying this. You're always crazy if you try and predict who's going to become the next pope. And I'll admit it. It's a crazy thing to do, but I think it would be the appropriate move at this point.
Okay, I think I could agree more. I couldn't agree more with you. Thank you, Dr. Jones, and have a nice Easter, Octave.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right. Next, we're going to go to Jamie. Are you there, Jamie?
Or is it Jaime?
Jaime, maybe Jaime.
Oh, yes. How's it going? Nice to speak with you, Dr. Jones. I'm a big fan. Hope you're well.
Thank you.
I was hoping respectfully to see if I could persuade you on the matter of race by asking first a sort of rhetorical question, which would be the following. Would you agree that at least one of the reasons why there are more men in prison than women is because of biological factors?
You could say that, but I would say that it's economic factors. I'm going to say, if you rob a gas station, you'll go to jail. If you steal, I did a song about this. If you rob a convenience store, you will go to jail. If you steal $50 billion or more, you'll be too big to fail. This is the fundamental bias in our legal system, and it comes down to the fact that low-level crimes, which are committed more by blacks than any other group, get punished out of all proportion to white-collar crimes. Give me Samuel, what's it, Bank Friedman or whatever that guy's name was, the Jew who was in this Ponzi scheme, giving all this money to the Democratic Party. People like that, I said, he billions, we're talking about billions there, hundreds of millions, he gets a slap on the wrist. Whereas the guy with tries to stick up a convenience store goes to, 20 years. So I don't think that the male-female distinction is as important as the economic distinction.
Is it partially important, though? Is it a fact? Are biological factors a factor contributing to male-female differences in arrest patterns or being jailed?
Look, you're talking to a guy who interviewed a black lady from the south side of Chicago who, I don't know how many people she murdered. She was a prostitute, and she got tired of just being paid by, $20 for her services, and she started killing people. So she's serving 7 consecutive terms in Dwight Penitentiary in Illinois, because they convicted her on 7 first-degree murders. So she'll be in there for the rest of her life. That's a woman's prison. So there are plenty of women in prison. So is the violence there because she's a woman or because she's black? Now, I'm getting into the racial thing. And I've talked a lot about this, the south side of Chicago. Is it because she's a woman or because she comes from the south side of Chicago? You'd have trouble, selecting out one or the other. Used to be that women were not prone to violent crimes. I think I see where you're going, but I don't see that it's conclusive.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the argument will continue by pointing out that people of different races, which would be understood as different genetic endowments that have been built up over hundreds of thousands of years, might have different predispositions to certain behaviors.
Right. And I think it's not that complicated. If you look into the background of this woman and the general background of black culture on the south side of Chicago, you don't have to go back hundreds of thousands of years. It's the basically family dysfunction. And if you separate families out, compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, you'll find that family dysfunction is a big breeder of crime. Incest.
Certainly.
Incest. Yeah. I'm talking about incest. I'm talking about your mother is a whore and her latest boyfriend comes in and rapes you. This is all the endemic to the south side of Chicago, and I don't think we need genetics as an explanation for it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, good question. We'll keep moving here. Who was it? I think it was Veritasity. Are you there?
Hello. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, and Mike and Big Mike. And thank you, Dr. Jones, for printing my letter this month in Culture Wars magazine, my review of the Phil Donahue and his perfidious life.
Good.
You know, I wanted to... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Thank you. You're welcome. It's a privilege to print your material. Go ahead.
Oh, that's an honor. Thank you. You're making me blush, Doctor. But here's the thing. My idea, and I don't use the AI or Grok or anything, but what I've come to see about this is, so AI is like the techno Talmud. It's very Talmudic. I'm trying to understand what does it actually do? So it seems to aggressively take opinions depending on the facts that you feed it. And then if you change the words or whatever, it can, like, maybe one right after the other, very aggressively argue, for sake of, you know, the way it explains things, totally contradictory things. So if you're feeding it one piece of information, it'll go down that road. And then if you have to tweak it, well, it'll aggressively argue whatever that position is, or state it, not necessarily argue, which it might be exactly contradictory. I see it as very Talmudic, because AI to me seems to be based on the idea that there's no objective truth. At its root, it's always going to argue or state something based on, you know, just individual words or ideas.
Yeah, that, you know, I agree.
What do you think?
It's garbage in, garbage out. I understand that principle. I don't understand why where Grok gets off making value judgments against me, like polemical. Where did polemical come from? How does a computer know that I'm polemical? Somebody had to program, plug that in. It sounds like the ADL. I can't imagine that the ADL has nothing to do with Grok in certain areas. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. If there's one guy they would like to sideline, it's E. Michael Jones. I was a little bit upset when Candace Owens won Anti-Semite of the Year award, because I was ready to demand a recount. There's nobody. And Nick Fuentes attacking Jason Whitlock says, well, you had E. Michael Jones on you. But I've become kind of the gold standard here of people you don't talk to. So I can't imagine that AI, Grok, which is run by Elon Musk, who goes to Auschwitz and kind of does his penance there in Auschwitz, I can't imagine that they're not influencing AI with these value judgments. What does a computer know about value judgments?
I mean, there must be a rabbi hidden back there somewhere entering stuff in, right? And they hear EMJ and the red flags go off.
I think that's totally plausible. I think that's totally plausible.
Now, the other example of AI that we're trying to figure out, how is it really going to damage politics or international relations? We've already seen the example. I don't know if you followed this, but last year, I remember the New York Times and some other outlets had this story about how is the IDF deciding their targets in their genocide. They didn't call it a genocide, but it's obviously a genocide, right? And so, all their technology in the IDF is AI. They're using AI. So what are they saying? They will not take responsibility for carpet bombing, ethnically cleansing, wiping out thousands of buildings. Because, oh no, that was AI made that decision to bomb this building, which to anybody else obviously had 99% all civilians in it, right?
Right.
So that's
a great example. A great example of basically shifting the blame, which the Jews are notorious for doing. And the Jew never does anything wrong and blames it all on someone else. So now you have a convenient fall guy in artificial intelligence. I think that's
ever the victim.
on target to if you pardon the pun.
Yeah, ever the victim. And then the last thing I want to say is about the Holy Father, Pope Francis, here's the one thing, and I don't, I want to see if you agree with this, because, you know, there's a tendency, my first reaction, we went, oh, you know, he was just a terrible Pope and did things wrong. I think that really he's very much, he's going, his legacy is going to be kind of like what happened with Vatican II. So the actual documents of Vatican II are not corrupted or not heretical specifically. I don't believe, I accept them. The interpretation that came later was the thing that did all the damage. Now, what I see and I dread is that Francis is already being used by some people who are absolutely not Catholics. These Jesuits are out to destroy the church. And then the other sort of people that are in the church, and they're already going to be using Francis. And, you know, he was deliberately weaponized ambiguity is a good word for him. Very Peronist, right? But I think that's a very damaging legacy to have, because at this point, we need clarity. And these people are going to destroy it moving ahead. Who knows what they'll bring in gay marriage or what else to say. What do you think? What do you think of that idea?
I think that there are more overriding concerns. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, this, the gay marriage has kind of had its day. I don't think that's the first, the top thing on the cardinal's mind right now. I'm going to say it again. I think the top thing on everybody's mind now is the Jewish question. And do the Jews have a right to kill anybody they don't like? That's a fundamental civilization threatening issue. And I think that's all on their mind. That's my speculation. Okay. Thank you.
You could be right.
Thank you.
Pizza balla for Pope.
I agree.
Thank you, Doctor.
I agree.
Goodbye.
All right. Thank you for that. Good questions. We're going to go with one more here, and then we're going to go to the chats so you guys start typing them in. It's going to be Chicago Talk Show host. He couldn't raise his hand, but he was DMing me, telling me to help me out. You there, Chicago Talk Show host?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, EMJ and Mike. Dr. E.A. Michael Jones, I want to add in, yes, AI is already becoming insufferable. It's riddled with corruption. And the target, this isn't going to be shocking anybody here, is truth, logos. And I do agree that people need to read more. I want to share with you that I'm working on a new video highlighting Logos Rising and Degenerate Moderns. It's a reaction video from Alex O'Connor's 1.8 million views video titled Why I Left Christianity with Rhett McLaughlin. And I got to tell you, I'm connecting this with what you said, because Rhett is telling people when it comes to things like evolution to go to ChatGPT and get information, right? And he gets his inspiration for why he left the church from reading a book written by an astronomer talking about things like the old universe, all kinds of things that are inventing things, willful blindness to the point of blasphemy, saying things like that Jesus Christ, you know, he laughs at the idea of the resurrection. And he says that maybe there was some mass grave involved, maybe some rich man stole
the body that was in the gospel just yesterday. The Jews went to the guards and bribed them, say someone stole the body. This is not a new idea. Okay. It's been around for 2000 years and it's wrong. Okay. This is exactly, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right here.
And Dr. Jers, I'll end it here. He's in that catch 22, the modern, where he denounces he wants excess pleasures, but at the very same time, he understands that they're empty. So I just wanted to add that in too, that I'm going to be promoting that. And, you know, none of this is shocking. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you're troubled by Darwinism, please read Logos Rising, especially the chapter on the four atheists, who are all Darwinists. This is the fundamental form of atheism in our age, and it is riddled with contradictions that these people will not admit, and apparently the media wants to cover them over, and the rest of the people are too besotted to understand what's going on. Christopher Hitchens, just the sleight of hand, you know. Sophisticated computer models tell us that light-sensitive cells became the eye over blah, blah, blah. Wait a minute. either the light sensitive cells can see, in which case they're already an eye, or they can't see, in which they'll never be an eye. This is metaphysics 101. That's the whole point of Logos Rising, and it will liberate you from these charlatans who use Darwinism as a form of mystification and control. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chicago talk show hosts. Now to jump to the chats. All right. Starting off here on, let's see, Rumble from Christians Praying. Dr. Jones, why do people accuse the Jesuits of being Masons? All over the internet that PF regularly talks to Freemasons. Also AI media, why?
Freemason is a word for people who are afraid to say the word Jew. That's the primary Freemason. This a class example is Taylor Marshall, that stupid book, Infiltration, a really dumb book. A man who used the term Freemason as a boogeyman because he never did any research. He doesn't know anything about anything, never understood what was behind the scenes or any of that type of stuff. That's where the word Freemason comes. Now, that's what I'm saying. It's a category of the mind right now for people who can't say the word Jew. But if you read Barrow Metal, for example, you realize that in the 18th century, this was a serious conspiracy against throne and altar that needed to be taken seriously and led to the French Revolution, among other things, the suppression of the Jesuits in Paraguay when the Jesuits were good guys and so on and so forth. So that's generally why people use the word Freemason.
And time to jump to Cozy. Cozy, let's see. Doug the Thug asks, Pope Francis died and Nick Fuentes is still silent. Is this the Catholic leadership we are looking for?
I don't think that's quite true. Nick Fuentes came out and attacked Jared Taylor because Jared Taylor said that the Pope betrayed white people, which Fuentes correctly pointed out, well, this is not the church for white people. This is the church for every single person on the face of this earth. And so the whole idea of there's a privileged group is completely un-Catholic, and you can't expect the Pope to be a shill for Jared Taylor's stupid ideas. So I was glad that Nick made that claim.
From Dr. Amy Smith on Rumble, were Ted Kaczynski's warnings overblown due to perhaps a lack of faith?
Amy, you're going to have to tell me what Ted Kaczynski's warnings were. Is it like technological, ecological? I can't answer the question because I don't know what the warnings were.
Okay, I'm scrolling through here. Where is it? From Dagtastic, Dr. Jones, is it morally permissible to vote for Pierre Poilievre?
It is morally mandatory to vote for the lesser of two evils. And so whether Poilievre, the candidate for Prime Minister of Canada, is the lesser of two evils is something I can't answer because I don't know who he's running against.
Fair enough. Next on Cozy from a user, can you recommend a book on the correct interpretation of the Michelson-Morley experiment?
Yeah, Bob Sungenis's book, Galileo Was Wrong, deals with that in detail.
And for people who don't know, what experiment was that?
Okay, so basically the Michelson-Morley experiment was to see if there's any evidence of motion, if the Earth is moving. Because it's not clear, we're standing here, it's not clear that we're hurtling through the universe at 13,000 miles per hour. That would generate significant wind, okay? So wait a minute, wind is a function of air. So they tried to measure like ether. Is there any indication that the Earth is moving? And the Michelson-Morley experiments pretty much prove conclusively that there is no evidence that the Earth is moving, no evidence. Using light, bouncing light beams back and forth off the moon and stuff like that. That's in general what it's about. And I think that Bob Sungenis makes a convincing case for geocentrism based on that and other evidence.
Next question from Dan T19. We have our EMJ spies out there, I guess. Did you see that Michael Voris has a new YouTube channel?
I've seen various podcast. Yeah, I've seen them.
Has that been around for a while? Or
don't know. Don't know.
All right. From A.G. DeVille. Oh, wait, that was for someone. Well, maybe I can phrase it. It was for someone else in the chat and a question mark, so I asked it. Basically, what's more important, nature or nurture?
Good question. they're both important. This was the battle of the in sociology during the 20th century. The nature people were the racists, and the nurture people were Franz Boas and Margaret Mead. And it led to who was the John B. Watson who said everything was nurture and there was no nature, there was no human being. It goes back and forth. So they're both, if you're taking them as the example, they're both wrong. They're both wrong. And it's whatever, what we're talking about is a complex interaction between nature and nurture. And I've been, the main conversation I've been having lately is with the racist who say that behavior is a function of nature or your DNA. And I don't think there's a plausible explanation for that. If you talk, you're talking about complex interaction and trying to explain this to people who can't make the distinction between the brain and the mind, who are basically materialists, no matter what they tell you. And that leads pretty much nowhere. But to say, on the other hand, with John B. Watson, that everything is basically programmed into you and there is no human nature, that's wrong too. So start there and kind of work toward the middle.
All right, from Comb Sile on Rumble, does Dr. Jones have any comment about kneecap controversy?
About what?
This says kneecap controversy.
I have no idea what that is.
No idea what kneecap controversy is. From MacBoomer on Rumble, Dr. Jones, can we say that Grok has a learning disability?
Does it learn? I mean, this it changes. It's obvious that it changes its mind. And the one thing you have to say about Grok, it doesn't hold grudges. It's programmed to dislike certain people, like yours truly, but it doesn't hold grudges, and it will immediately abandon a position and take another position. So the question is, does it have any mind of its own? It seems to when it says that I'm polemical. You hurt my feelings, Grok, when you say that. But I think that's programmed into it, and I don't think it has a mind of its own. And so you'll never be able to depend on it for any type of complex judgment, because it's, yeah, stick to baseball or stuff like that. I've been asking a lot of questions, like what was the weight of the 1963 Studebaker Lark? I think you can get a fairly accurate answer from that. But you have to, when you get into stuff that's more complicated, it's hopeless.
Next question is from John on Telegram. Do you know what happened to Roosh?
No idea.
Okay, I'm just...
Though he stopped here on his way. He stopped at my house, did an interview, and then he was having a... he was undergoing a conversion, and he was having... I think he was having trouble. He was going around trying to go to Orthodox monasteries, and I don't think they were happy to have him. He had moved in back with his mother. He'd given up his career as the pickup artist, and that was a good thing. But what he replaced it with, I don't know. I haven't heard from him in years.
Cool. Okay. Let's see. Now, wait a minute. On Rumble, Dr. Jones, have you heard of the Sanhedrin letter to Trump? Wants him to establish an international divine court based on 7 Noahide laws.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. As Mark Levine said, he was in the White... Trump appointed him to something or other, and he said, described Trump as the first Jewish president. Probably accurately.
Cool. All right. There's, I guess, the reason that I guess it's, I'm scrolling through, I'm trying to get questions. I guess there's a lot of discussion going on, and it's hard to find a question. Let's see, there's gotta be like one or two more here. Let's get a good, it's about 6 o'clock anyway. Let's try Telegram. Okay, here we go. From Christy Rippinger on Telegram. Let's see. Seeing an increase in Second Crusade narratives in which Catholic and Orthodox unite to fight holy war against Muslim invading Europe. Is this just another divide and conquer engineered strategy to keep Christians from fighting each other?
I think it is. I think all of this anti-Muslim stuff is being run by the Jews. I mean, you have people like Tommy Robinson in England, Muslim bashers. They're all being paid by the Jews, one way or the other. It's a Jewish op, and I'm saying they know this because they're afraid, especially in England, that the Catholics are going to unite with the Jews and oppose the oligarchs. And I think there's certainly on, let's say, sexual or moral issues, these are people who come from traditional cultures who are more in tune with Catholic moral teaching than the natives are, because of the corruption, the moral corruption that has taken place in England after 500 years of Protestantism.
Okay, it's about 6 o'clock. Want to do like one or two more here?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I can find them. Let's see, where was, there was one over here. This is from Dan T19. Dr. Jones, what is Hebrew Catholic?
Well, there was a man by the name of David Moss who wanted to create the Association of Hebrew Catholics was something. He's a Jewish convert. His sister is converted as well. She became sister. I think her name was Rosalind, but she became a nun, has a real old traditional habit that she wears. You can see her on Mother Angelica. And they created an Association of Hebrew Catholics. Now, what does that mean? Because then you have to get to Jewish identity. And this is problematic because I just had a long conversation with Brother Nathaniel about, well, what is Jewish identity? And I wrote a book called The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, in which I said Jewish identity is based on the rejection of Logos as expressed by the killing of Christ. And so Jewish identity is like being a homosexual. It's incompatible with joining the Catholic Church. Now, obviously, if you're raised as a Jew, I've had the discussion with my friend Paul in England, who, you know, converted and now wonders about, well, I still like lox and bagel. He didn't say that, but it's something similar. I like lox and bagel. Well, obviously, who cares whether you like lox and bagel? However, if you come into the church and the first thing you do is start attacking fellow Catholics as anti-Semites, I don't think you had a real conversion, because you have to leave that type of lack of charity at the door when you come into the church. Because if you lack charity, you cannot be saved. And this is lack of charity. There's no way around it. And I'm talking about people like Dawn Goldstein, who is ready at the drop of a hat to accuse fellow Catholics of being anti-Semites. So this is the type of identity problem that David Moss tried to deal with and was not, don't think he was particularly successful. He wanted a Hebrew rite or mass. I'm not sure, you know, what do you mean you want a Hebrew rite? Do you speak Hebrew? No, that wasn't the issue. I mean, I can understand if you're an ancient part of the church that grew up with a rite that goes back centuries and you're attached to that rite. Okay, I understand all that. But I don't see this Hebrew rite, and it didn't go anywhere either. The Jews that I knew at the time when I first met David Moss was Mark Druggen, Father Kleiber, both at the Martin de Porres community in Kentucky, and they didn't like the idea at the time. Mark Druggen is undergoing a kind of metamorphosis that I don't particularly understand, but they were both opposed to this idea of a Hebrew rite at the time. And it all revolves around this ambiguous understanding of what it means to be a Jew. If it's rejection of Logos, no, you can't drag that into the church with you. You have to leave that at the door if you want to come into the church.
Cool. Let's just do one quick more here. SS Tiger SS Onkozi asked Dr. Jones, have you read The Plot to Attack the Church by Mary Spina? Any thoughts on the book?
Yeah, I incorporated it. It's part of, I incorporated his insights in the chapter on Second Vatican Council, which is in the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit.
All right, there you guys have it. Thanks again. EMJ Live is every Friday at 5 Eastern Standard Time. Please subscribe to Culture Wars Magazine at culturewars.com. And all Dr. Jones books can be bought at fidelitypress.org. The America book is coming out soon, so keep an eye on that. Subscribe to Telegram, Cozy Gab, BitChute, all those things. And really quick announcement, there's a symposium in June in Maine that Dr. Jones is having. The website, if you're interested in signing up and going to that, is realchristianityfirst.com, realchristianityfirst.com. That's going to be June 14th. And if Dr. Jones wants to mention a little bit about that, I won't stop him. So Dr. Jones, last words.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going there. But what I'd like to emphasize here is everything that Grok said was based on the Medjugorje Deception, which is the book that I wrote. So it proves once again the superiority of the book. Now, I've been emphasizing the physiological and technological problems associated with scrolling and the kind of constant distraction that it creates. But here we have the epitome of artificial intelligence, and it's only as smart as the books that it reads. And that's all it has. It doesn't have its own, any independent source of anything. So it's, again, as I said, and I've been saying, I feel vindicated for saying this all of Lent, stop scrolling and start reading.
Awesome. We'll see you guys next week. God bless.